Here in 2 Chronicles 16, you seem to have Asa really messing up. Well, he does. He brings out the silver and gold from the treasures of the house of Yahweh and the king's house and sent to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, and asks him to break his agreement with Baasha, the king of Israel, because Asa, king of Judah, is frightened of his brethren, Baasha, king of Israel, and the Israelites are attacking Judah, and he knows that they are supported by Syria, and so he gives all this gold and silver to the Syrians, and they break their treaty. Just dirty politics when money was involved. The Syrians broke their treaty. Now, what should he have done? And so often the biblical record is framed, I think, in such a way as to beg that question. What ought he to have done? Well, he ought to have trusted in God, of course. He should not have been involved in fighting his brethren. So Hanani the seer comes and rebukes him in verse 7. You've relied on the king of Syria and have not relied on Yahweh your God. Therefore, as the army of the king of Syria escaped out of your hand, the implication is you could not only have beaten Baasha or sorted out that problem with the Israelites, you could have actually defeated the mighty Syrians. Because, verse 9, the eyes of Yahweh are running to and fro all over the earth in your support. So, to turn to worldly help, to use God's gold and silver, because every penny we have is his, not ours, to use that to justify our own lack of faith in God is a pretty awful thing to do. And yet we have all done this in one way or another. Now, some years earlier, God had given him a similar situation when the Ethiopians came with a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen. Verse 8, and you relied on Yahweh at that time, and he delivered them into your hand. But now, as often happens in life, the trial repeats. In this case, with not such a big thing, and he fails it. It's rather like you might have cancer that looks like terminal, and it's absolutely cured, and your faith is rewarded, but then you fail on something after that, years later, something apparently much smaller than that. This is how life goes. But what I want to say is, how does God sum up Asa? How he sums him up is actually not to mention this sin that he did with the gold and silver. Not at all. He sums it up like this in 2 Chronicles 15, verse 17. The high places weren't taken away out of Israel, but the heart of Asa was perfect all his days. So, what are we to make of that, comparing that with this using God's gold and silver to buy help instead of trusting in him? It is that it's a question of the heart. The heart of Asa was perfect all his days. God looks upon the heart rather than surface-level sins. Now, as soon as I say that, I have to say, it is not for you and me to start saying, I shall do this. It is a surface-level sin. It's not a heart issue. No. It's not for us to judge that. This is how God judges. But the issue God had was, look, the high places weren't taken away. And yet, apparently, they were by Asa, but obviously not really very deeply. People could still combine the worship of the idols with the worship of Yahweh by doing so at the high places rather than in the sanctuary. These high places were basically places of idol worship. So God's judgments on people would surprise us, really. We would have thought that he would have, in the final analysis, made a note that Asa messed up over this business of using the silver and gold of God's temple to buy off the king of Assyria. To buy off Baasha through giving it to the king of Syria. But that's not actually mentioned, even though there is no recorded repentance, really, by Asa over this issue. I think the point is that you can have highs and lows in your spiritual path. And I'm not saying that God's not interested in them. Of course he is. And the low points of lack of faith are not at all justifiable. But in the end, somebody can fail as Asa failed at this point, and yet their heart is actually with God. Now, I will have to keep repeating that this is not to say that, don't worry about it, that's just a surface-level sin, don't worry about it. Look, Hananiah, the prophet, comes and rebukes him quite sternly, so it's not that it doesn't matter. It is that God looks on the heart, and that in this case, the heart of Asa was every day perfect, including in these days of his lack of faith in God and his desire to turn to human help. And this should help us, I think, not only in some level of comfort for ourselves in our own failures, but when you look at other people whose failures, as it is with human nature, we see the failures of others so much more clearly than we do our own. You don't know what's going on in the hearts of people. You go around and preach in prisons, and you meet criminals, you meet people who've done bad things. You get to know them. Well, you can't judge, God is a judge, but it would appear by all accounts that their heart is actually with God. They messed up in a certain way, but as I say, only God can judge this. You cannot judge it, but it would appear that this, they are, some of them, a case like Asa. Yeah, sin on a surface level, but the heart still with God. And I think you see that really in David, a man who was a man after God's own heart, and yet he still sinned. And I'm not justifying at all adultery and murder. These are major issues, and he was majorly judged for them. And yet through it all, his heart was somehow still with God. So I leave that with you to ponder about, and I hope you don't run away thinking, oh great, let's go sin, it's all only surface level. Not at all. I'm saying that God's judgments are surprising. And we cannot judge, we must not judge, because we are unable to judge. This is one reason we are not to judge, and we all think we can judge, but we mustn't, because we are unable to. We don't have the psychological penetration of other people's hearts which God has. And we can take great comfort that he who alone does have that power judges, as we see here with Asa, very mercifully.